into T Equals Time. Thank you for joining us, and we've got an international panel of time travel experts. And recently we watched the Back to the Future film starring Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd, and we're getting together to talk about time travel and these three excellent films. I'm up in Canada, I'm Robert Volman, and I'm down in the States, I'm joined by Matt.
Hi.
And Brighton.
Hello.
Yeah, well, let's jump right into it. Matt, what did you think of these movies?
All three of them together or one at a time? Because I liked the first one, and then two was much worse, and then three was a little bit better.
How would you, Brighton?
You know, I would count the first one as probably one of my favorite movies ever, and I always had kind of a bad impression of the second and third, but just watching them in the last couple weeks or so, I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would, and probably like them more now that I've had some distance from when they first came out. So I'd say overall, the trilogy, it's totally solid. The first one is a classic, and the second and third, not so bad.
What about you, Rob?
Oh, man, let me tell you, I loved the first movie, and it came out, I was a kid, and I absolutely loved it. Like, for months afterwards, I was drinking Pepsi, I even got one of those orange puffy vests, and I just, man, it was like the best movie ever. I watched it 1,000 times. The second and third ones I watched because I was such a huge fan of the first one, but I didn't watch them over and over again like the first one. I just watched them once or twice like a normal person, but that first movie was just awesome. Although I was a little creeped out, actually, by the fact that his mother fell in love with him. I found it to be a little bit creepy. What do you guys think?
I think I was probably too young when I first saw it to really be totally creeped out by it. I was like 5 when the first movie came out, and it was just kind of like a funny thing. But yeah, looking back now, definitely uncomfortable.
The only thing I remember about it from when it first came out is I saw it in the theater at some kid's birthday party. So I must have been 6, and all I remember is falling asleep and then, like, sleeping through most of it. And then afterwards on the ride home, the parents of that kid just kept telling us, there are words they said in that movie that we don't want you to say, so don't repeat any of those swear words. Other than that, I never saw number 3, and I only saw half of number 2 before about a month ago.
Yeah, I saw all 3 of them in the theaters, and I really have specific memories about all of them. The first one, I think I actually saw my mom's birthday when I was just a little tyke, and I loved it, and I remember being really freaked out by the disappearing picture. The second one, I think that's probably one of the movies I have anticipated more than anything else. I was probably 9 or 10. And when I saw that Back to the Future 2 was coming soon up on the marquee, I was just, like, flipping out. Like, I could not wait for that. And then the third one. Hoverboards, how about that?
I was reading online that a lot of people had thought those were real and were asking where they can get them.
I think that was mostly in the U.S.
And, I know a kid who was trying to make his own with little, like, shower curtain magnets.
I think it's completely ridiculous, because when they push the board, they're pushing air, but somehow that makes them go forward. So that if they were reaching all the way down to the ground and pushing themselves, then it would make more sense. But I just don't understand how the hoverboard works if you're pushing air.
And why did the hoverboard stop working when he was over water?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, did they even try to explain that, or just, they didn't work on water?
They said it doesn't work on water unless you have a motor.
Hey, McFly, you bojo! The boats don't work on water unless you've got power!
Oh, yeah, but they said it in a weird future punk way. Billy Zane was all over that.
Oh, yeah. Billy Zane was one of the punks in Biff's gang, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That was Future Biff, right?
Yeah, Future Biff had Billy Zane in his gang, and then he also alternate 1985 Biff.
Future Biff had a way better gang, not just Billy Zane, but he also had that really cute blonde in his gang.
Yeah, he had a girl in the gang.
He had a lady. Should we discuss the plots of the films? Is anyone listening to this that maybe hasn't ever seen them? And if they haven't, I'm curious why they're listening. But
I think everyone's seen the first film, but I guess for those that haven't, the first film basically Doc Brown wants to show Marty his little invention and winds up getting gunned down by terrorists. And so in order to escape, Marty McFly drives around in his DeLorean and accidentally winds up going back to 1955. And of course, the movie was shot in 85, so that was 30 years before the start of the film. And then he accidentally causes his parents not to... I guess there was this one moment where they fell in love, and he accidentally caused that not to happen, and instead for his mother to fall in love with him.
Whoa, wait a minute. Doc, are you trying to tell me that my mother has got the hots for me?
Which, like I said, is the creepiest moment in television history, other than when Luke and Leia kissed. So it's very awkward. Anyway, so he now has to... So he finds the younger version of Doc Brown and convinces the younger version of Doc Brown that, you know, he is from the future, and shows him the flux capacitor and all that. And actually, to add to their problems, the time machine's broken now. So not only does he have to get his mother and his father back to fall in love, otherwise he ceases to exist, and on top of that, he has to somehow get the time machine working again. So, and of course, it all works out, and he manages to get back to 1985. And then at the end of the movie, at the end of the first movie, Doc Brown suddenly shows up and says, "Marty, we have to go." And Marty says, "You know, where are we going?" And he says, "Well, we're going to the future. You know, your kids don't turn out so good." And so they want going to the future, and that's sort of the segue into the second movie. And I don't know, Brighton, do you want to talk about the second movie? Give a quick summary.
Yeah, so the second movie, which picks up about 5 minutes before the first movie ended. Doc Brown, for all his bluster about not doing anything that might change the past, has absolutely no problem changing the future. And so picks up Marty to go to the future and straighten his kids out. There's some fun little adventures in the future, which I think the way the movie was marketed, you kind of went into it with the impression that the whole thing was going to take place in the future and that was going to be really cool, but that's really only about a quarter of the movie. Marty finds himself in the future as kind of a big screw-up. They mess around with some stuff. Then Biff, our villain, who is probably 70 years old by this time, finds the time travel machine, goes back, and gives to young 16-year-old Biff a sports almanac that has every possible sports score, because in that version of the future there's no such thing as the internet. So he gives him a sports book, and Biff becomes a sleazy billionaire. When Marty returns to the 1985, thinking everything's okay, he finds it to be this alternate reality, which is basically like hell on earth, and then has to go back to 1955 to stop Biff from giving Biff the book. And then Biff and Marty and Marty and Doc, and gets a little confusing. But, so Marty's got to stop Biff, and he's got to avoid the other Marty who's also there from the future, and you can look it up. And then at the end, the time travel device malfunctions, Doc disappears, and then at that very moment, a letter is delivered to Marty from Western Union that Doc wrote 70 years prior in 1885, letting Marty know that he went back to the Old West.
It's from the Doc! Dear Marty, if my calculations are correct, you will receive this letter immediately after you saw the DeLorean struck by lightning. First, let me assure you that I'm alive and well. I've been living happily these past 8 months in the year 1885. The lightning bolt... 1885! September 1885!
Wait, Ken! Wait a minute! What's this all about?
He's alive! The Doc's alive!
By the way, a little factoid here. The Western Union guy that delivered that letter to Marty at the end of the second movie is actually a famous Canadian actor named Joe Flaherty. He was in the original SCTV. He was a very famous Canadian comic.
And he's very, very hilarious on the TV series Freaks and Geeks as the worried dad. Freaks and Geeks takes place before the Back to the Future movies came out, but it was released afterwards.
So those are totally out of continuity with the film.
Right.
Okay.
So Matt, why don't you take the other movie?
Yeah, so number three Even though the letter that Doc had written to Marty says not to come back to the Old West to get me, he does. So he finds out before he goes back that Doc was killed by one of Biff's relatives. So they fix up the DeLorean, go back to the Old West, and try to save Doc from Biff's grandpa. And while there, Doc meets a teacher who he falls in love with, and basically they change a lot of history there. He saves her life when in the original history she had died. They end up saving Doc from Biff's relative. What's his name? Mad Dog? And then
Mad Dog
Hannon, that's right. And then they set up the DeLorean on... Oh, because the DeLorean got shot with an arrow, all the gas poured out of it. So in order to make it go, they put it on a train track, hijack a train, have the train push it, and once it reaches 80 miles an hour, then he comes back to the 80s, and it appears that Doc had stayed behind, or the Doc had stayed behind, but then Doc comes back to the 80s with the woman he had fallen in love with, who's now his wife, and they have kids, and their new time travel device is based on a train.
That third movie, I liked it a lot more watching it now, but there's a lot that kind of bugs me about it. I really don't like Mary Steenburgen, and I don't like school marms, so Mary Steenburgen as a school marm was pretty off-putting. And then that last action sequence with the train, just... I don't know how long it actually is, but it feels like that's an hour of the movie. It's just this train and people yelling, and it's like, can we just get on with this? We know it's going to be fine.
Oh, one thing...
So long.
No, I hear you. I think one thing we...
I think it would have been better if it turned out that that was Doc Brown's mother. I think that would have bring the whole thing full circle.
I really wouldn't have, wouldn't it?
I think one thing we failed to mention... that's important that runs through all these movies is Pepsi, because Pepsi is a huge sponsor of this movie, apparently. There's millions of Pepsi jokes throughout the whole thing.
I'll take a Pepsi free.
Yeah, that's my favorite. I love that. When he goes from 1980, so he's from 1985, he goes back to 1955, and for a joke, they try to make fun of 1955 by having Marty walk into the little, cafe or whatever that was and ask for a Pepsi Free, which, of course, was a drink that existed, I think, only in 1985. And the guy at the counter says, listen, if you want a Pepsi, you got to pay for it. Says, okay, just give me a tab. Again, another drink that only existed in 1985. So it's hilarious. They're trying to make fun of 1955. They want to make fun of 1985.
So that's a good point. Let's talk about, then, as far as time travel goes, the... sort of the culture shock that you would experience when actually, we all like sort of fantasize about time travel, but sometimes you ever think about the logistics of it? Like, if you really did go back to the 50s, what's that going to be like? And so I think the movie kind of touches on that. One thing I really liked is when Doc Brown had a suitcase full of money for all sorts of different periods, because I want to go back in time and buy like old baseball cards, but I'd have to find a bunch of old quarters to do that with.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of my favorite things, too. I think every time traveler would need different currency for every time he's going to go to.
And they'd need to know what people are drinking in those days, what people are wearing. Marty's wearing a life preserver and ordering Pepsi Free, and that's just completely out of place.
They would also have to know the fashion, so they don't look weird. They'd have to know, like, the local laws that might have been different in the past,
And if you go back with the swine flu, you're going to destroy the entire world by introducing the swine flu back in the 1800s.
Yeah, that's going to be one heck of an alternate future to come back to when everybody's dead. They also really know their history, because there's a lot of points in the second and third movie where Doc is like, hey, we'll hide it in that cave, because in that cave, it's still there 100 years from now. Then that would take a lot of know-how to know that somewhere in your town is a cave that no one's been in 100 years, so you can hide something there in the past. I think it's probably stretching it a bit in the movies, but it's kind of cool.
Well, I think if you're a time traveler, I think it would be important for you to know, like, a bunch of places where you could put things, that no one has been to, in case everyone has saved something for the future. I think a good time traveler would know that, you know? Don't you think?
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Another thing that kind of dated it was Huey Lewis.
Yeah.
Like,
because Huey Lewis, like, Pepsi and Tab only existed in 1985.
Exactly.
One thing I want to ask about is temporal paradoxes.
Paradox? You mean one of those things that can destroy the universe?
Just quickly!
I think every movie had a paradox. But I believe the second one obviously had the most egregious. So maybe we should focus on the second. Well, any movie, but I think the second movie is the one to focus on. Which temporal paradox really jumped out at you the most? What would you, Matt?
I can't think of one for number two. One that bothered me is the Goldie. You know, the mayor of the town. He goes back to the 50s in the first movie, and tells Goldie to be the mayor, or gives Goldie the idea of being the mayor.
Mayor Goldie Wilson. Like the sound of that.
And that right there is a paradox. Because where did it start? Who had the original idea? The same thing happened with, was it Chuck Berry?
Yeah, Chuck Berry.
Was introduced to Johnny B. Goode over the phone, and then apparently he plagiarized it, so...
That's my favorite temporal paradox, the ontological paradox. The fact that I have a favorite is interesting, but... Yeah, so Chuck Berry... Like, Marty's playing Chuck Berry's famous hit Johnny Be Good, and then Chuck Berry hears that over the phone and then goes and writes it. So it's like Chuck Berry is copying that from Marty, but really Marty copied that from Chuck Berry. So in an ontological paradox, that means Johnny Be Good has really no origin point, just kind of created itself somehow. And that's a really interesting thing for me to think about. Because it kind of makes sense that could happen, but then where did Johnny Be Good come from?
That happens in almost every time travel story, because they're trying to show a little... I don't know, it happened a lot in Quantum Leap. They called it touches with history, or touches with time, where he would give someone an idea because he knew that they already had come up with that idea in the future.
Yeah, it has happened in Star Trek. It's happened on Lost. Yes. It's a popular one.
Star Trek 4, yeah. Actually, the Chuck Berry thing, this isn't really about time travel, but it's a funny story. We had these summer students working in the office a while back, and one of them got this, one of those fruit smoothies, whatever you call them there, Jugo Juice, I think was the name of the store, Booster Juice, whatever. And I said, well, what kind do you have there? And she said, well, we've got it berry blast. It's got all the different types of berries. It's got raspberry, strawberry, blueberry. And so I, just giggled and said, does it have any Chuck Berry? And she just looked at me and said, well, I don't know what that is, but I'm sure it's in there. And I said, well, no, Chuck Berry. I mean, you got to know who Chuck Berry is. And she said, no, I don't know who Chuck Berry is. And so I said, well, like, come on, Johnny Be Good. You know the song Johnny Be Good with the song that played in Back to the Future. And she said, back to the what? And yeah, that was...
See, now she'd be a terrible time traveler because she doesn't even know anything about history.
Yeah, doesn't even know Chuck Berry.
She doesn't even know anything about berries either. That's interesting. I've heard people make the argument that these movies are, or that movie in particular is racist because it is implying that Chuck Berry couldn't come up with that sound on his own. But
really?
I think it was just a cute little joke. I don't think there was any sort of...
In number two...
Racist, accidental, or otherwise.
In number two, when Marty returns back to 1985 after it had been changed, his neighborhood's a total ghetto. And just to make sure that that's clear, it's a black family living in the house.
Yeah, that's true. I thought about that when I was watching it, too.
And didn't see a lot of black people in 2015, either.
That's right. Was Goldie in the mayor?
Except the mayor, maybe, huh?
Yeah,
the mayor. Yeah, Goldie was there, but he was in holograph form. Or hologram form. What was the one that bothered you, Rob?
Yeah, the paradox that bothered me most was actually in the second movie. And if you remember the plot from the second movie, they went to the future. And I actually have another question to ask about that later. But first, they went to the future... And Marty was actually one that had a brilliant idea to buy a sports almanac from the year 2015 with all the sports scores that, back to whatever year, and to take it back in time with him. But of course, Doc finds out what he's doing and talks him out of it and throws it in the trash can. And of course, this was all overheard by, Evil Biff, and he winds up stealing Marty's idea. And going into the past, so he goes back to 1955. So old Biff from 2015... goes back to see young Biff in 1955, and gives him the sports magazine. And then when old Biff is done, we actually see him going back to 2015, his 2015, his unchanged 2015, and returning the time travel vehicle to Doc and Marty, who then go back to 1985. Once back in 1985, they find out that everything's completely changed. And that's when Doc and Marty sort of figure out what's going on. And so Marty says, well, let's go back to 2015 and stop old Biff from stealing the car. And Doc says, we can't, because once we're in a new future now, we can't. Well, then how the heck could old Biff go to 2015? He should have also gone to a messed up 2015 as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. So really, that's that to me was, they didn't obey their own rules. It's a complete paradox. Am I right?
Right. As soon as old Biff got in the car, and as soon as he took off, the present 2015 should have changed right then to the ghetto 2015.
Maybe everything just corrected itself from 1985 to 2015.
Yeah.
Well, furthermore, if...
Paradox. Is there a way to justify that with parallel universes? I'm trying to think if there is a way that makes sense, or if it is just a total paradox.
No, they say that kind of thing can make sense. Like, if you go back and stop... if you go back and kill Hitler, then someone else will take his place. So you can change things for a bit, but eventually they'll get back on the same track again.
Yes, yeah, I guess I suppose it's possible that it all could have been part of the same timeline. But the other thing that bothers me too is, in that original timeline, in sort of the new one, I guess you could say, new Biff becomes rich, Doc Brown gets sent to a mental institution, which means that Doc Brown never could have invented the time machine, which means all of this could have never happened. Mm-hmm. In order for all this to happen, doesn't Doc Brown still have to invent the time machine? Otherwise, Biff never gets the magazine. Everything goes right back. You know, his mother never falls in love with Marty. Like, everything goes right back to normal.
Yeah, and they were really... Right? No, you're right. And they were really freaked out because an alternative timeline was created when Biff screwed things up. But they had been making changes to so many different things without any repercussions, or at least they could easily fix them, where... So, if you're going to say that you make one change, it creates a parallel timeline, then every single little change would make a different timeline.
Right, there would have been a parallel timeline if George and Mrs. McFly didn't end up getting together instead of it being such a disaster, which just created a parallel timeline.
Right.
But isn't that also a paradox? Because if Marty's the one that split them up, if Marty never existed, then how could Marty split them up?
Grandfather paradox!
Yeah.
Yep.
So we're hitting all the paradoxes. The movie's had all the paradoxes. But let me talk about the future, too. One thing that bothers me, too, now, traveling to the past is something that has been explored, but traveling to the future is one thing that's always bothered me. Because if you can travel to the future, isn't that implying that the future's deterministic? Like, how can you travel to something that doesn't exist yet?
Yeah, and that was kind of a big theme of the movies, too, that they tried to say, was like, the future hasn't been written yet.
Yeah.
But clearly it has, because they were traveling there.
I would say you can go to the future as long as time is fluid and it's always changing. But that means that the future that they went to is just one of millions of possible futures. Well, hang on.
Thing too, I noticed too, is that the future in the movie was the year 2015, and right now it's 2009. And apparently in the next 6 years, we have to not only invent cars that fly, but they have to become commonplace.
Yeah, completely commonplace. We've got a lot of progress to make for the next 5 years. I don't know about things like Canada, but here in the States, we've got this Obama guy. And so I can see the 2050 being totally realistic.
Don't the Cubs have to win the World Series?
Yep, 2015.
Yeah. They've got a lot of work to do if they're going to win the World Series in 2015.
Another thing is that Brighton mentioned when he was describing the first episode, when he was describing the second episode, is basically you can't make these changes to the past, but it's okay to go ahead and change the future. But that doesn't make sense, because 2015 is still the past for 2016 or 2045. So I don't see any... I see a moral problem there, because if they're saying morally you can't change the past, which Doc was always talking about, then the same thing should apply to the future.
Right. You're exactly right. And also, if you're changing the future, at what point do you determine... how come they have to change it so that Marty's kid doesn't get arrested, but then they don't make any attempt to change all the other things that have obviously gone wrong with them, you know? And why did they even have to travel to the future? Why couldn't he just say, your kid's going to be arrested in 2015, so make sure you don't be such a screw-up of a fuck?
Yeah, go on vacation on this date. Take your kid with you on vacation.
Yeah, you could cheat death. The other thing, too, is almost like he cheated death, because Doc Brown was dead, except he was dead in the past. So since he's dead in the past, Marty could go back and stop him from dying. But nothing would... I mean, he could also do the same thing in the future. They could just go to the future, find out when they die, go back there a day before and stop them from whatever it was that killed them. You know, probably Biff or one of Biff's descendants. But I mean, also, did you notice at one point there was two time machines, because the time machine was buried from 1885 all the way to 1985, but also the time machine existed in 1955, actually on a couple of occasions. So for a little while in 1955, there was three time machines in existence. What do you guys think about that?
Ah, that's good, because the problem was they didn't have gas to run Marty's DeLorean. All they had to do was go siphon the gas out of the one that was hidden in the mine. No?
The problem in 1955 wasn't that they were out of gas. The problem was was the nuclear fusion thing, right?
They were out of plutonium, yeah.
What?
Well, they were out of plutonium, but the Mr. Fusion hadn't been invented yet, which was the thing that didn't need plutonium.
Never mind then. Still, they could have taken it from one time machine and given it to the other.
Yeah, the Mr. Fusion existed. It was in a mine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, so
Marty didn't know that.
But time travel is confusing.
Okay, Manny, how would you what do you want to talk about in these movies, Matt? What did you find interesting?
I think another problem, just while we're on the paradoxes, is Mary Steenburgen, they saved her life, and of course by saving her life when in the original timeline she died, that should have created an alternative timeline that they should have tried to fix. And it as I was watching number three, and they were on the train, and Mary Steenburgen got on the train, and at that point I was thinking, okay, well this is good, because they'll let her go over the cliff and let her die, and that fixes things in the timeline, because she's supposed to be dead anyway. And I was thinking they should have done that, and had Doc make a sacrifice in order to save the space-time continuum. But they didn't end up doing it. But I was thinking that would have made it better for me. It would have been more like the Star Trek episode, City on the Edge of Forever. That's the right one, right, Rob?
Yeah, there's a handful of Star Trek episodes that have made me cry, and that's one of them right there. not like Spock's brain. That made me cry because it was so bad. City on the Edge of Forever made me cry because of that touching ending scene where James D. Kirk has to let the love of his life die in order, you know, to stop the Nazis from taking over the world. So,
yeah, I thought that would have been cool if they did that in number three too. Plus, I'm not a big fan of Mary Steenburgen, so I also would have enjoyed it for that reason. But
I want to talk about future, and not necessarily regarding time travel or the paradoxes, but just kind of the way that the future is portrayed in movies. Which I thought was really interesting here is, it seems like Hollywood screenwriters can come up with these really inventive, wild ideas for the future, but then they kind of forget the mundane aspects of day-to-day life are going to change. So, in the future, you have a jacket that automatically adjusts itself to fit your body and has a built-in drying device. And then the jacket also talks, but the way it talks is in, like, a 1985 computer voice. So it's this awesome future jacket, and it's like, your jacket fits now.
Drying mode on. Jacket drying. Your jacket is now dry.
Or also in 2015, they still had dot matrix printers.
Yep, a fax machine.
Yeah.
Didn't they go back to Velcro shoes?
The shoes had Velcro on them, but then they would also adjust to fit.
I wonder if it's just the jacket that talked to them, I wonder if their underwear talked to them too.
It probably would. I think I'll close talk in the future.
I could use a pair of the auto-adjusting pads.
The future is that the headline, Doc shows Marty a headline of the USA Today. This is the USA Today, our national newspaper, and the front page story with a huge picture is Youth Jailed. That's the front page of the USA Today.
Then right, it should be something about Britney Spears, shouldn't it? That's totally
right. It should be something about John Kate, Balloon Boy. But no, youth jailed for that. And then it changes, and what does it say? Like, youth honored or something like that? Like, oh, look, we did it. The future, the headline's changing to youth not jailed.
I'm just glad that wars and politics and everything is cleared up by 2015, so that's not on the front page.
Right, but we're back to street gangs. Street gangs that really seemed to be determined to do nothing more than cause mischief.
Those are great street gangs, though. I mean, what did you guys think of Biff? Biff or Griff or Mad Dog, you know, all those different, or even old Biff. I loved his king. He's one of my favorite bad guys in movies. 80s had the best bad guys, period. 80s movies had, you know, Darth Vader, Hans Gruber, and Die Hard, like all the great bad guys from the 80s. And one of my favorites was Biff. What did you guys think of Biff?
I love that Biff is so purely evil. Not even evil, he's just purely a jerk. Like, there's a scene in Back to the Future 2 where we see young Biff steal a ball from some kids and throw it on the roof. Like, even the biggest jerk I know would never do that.
And it's not necessary. It's not like we're cheering for Biff and all of a sudden he throws the ball on the roof. We're like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
I like in number 3 when... What was his... Biff's grandkid's name or whatever?
Griff, I think.
Griff. I like that the director didn't say to him, less is more, because he was over-the-top ridiculous in his acting, and it didn't even seem the way I've ever seen any human being talk or act. I don't know, maybe that's how they are in the future.
Maybe they all carry around little baseball bats that just, you know, like he did. I don't know.
A pen baseball bat?
Yeah, you never know when the baseball game is going to break out. Griff will be ready.
That's right.
Well, it's funny that every generation of Biffs is jerks. And with Marty's family, it seems like every other generation is mildly retarded. Because George is, I'd say he's a low-functioning adult at best. And then Marty seems...
Now, Biff, you're not trying to con me now, Biff.
But then,
do I really have to swear, Marty?
Marty seems pretty normal, but then Marty Jr. is another complete weirdo.
Oh, yeah. Great performance by Michael J. Fox as Marty Jr., by the way. I really like that.
But I was horrified by Marty's daughter, which was also Michael J. Fox.
Yeah.
I'm glad they could have a creepy moment in each of the movies. Nice.
Okay, here's something... kind of a tangent, but when they go back to the 1800s and Marty meets his ancestors, the male looks just like Marty, and then his wife looks just like Marty's mom.
Mom, is that you?
There now. You've been asleep for nearly 6 hours now.
Which doesn't make any sense, because Marty's mom was from a whole different family tree, you know? Unless more than one McFly has married more than one.
Yeah, because that was his paternal grandmother, and his paternal grandmother shouldn't look like his mom unless the different family lines had crossed in the past, and that explains why some of the kids are really slow.
I think it does. I think we solved that one.
It also explains the Oedipus thing that happened in the first movie, right?
Yeah.
You know, the other thing, too, is you notice they also have running gags and common themes throughout the entire movie. For instance, the most hilarious of them all is that Biff always winds up with a face full of manure. Is there some, but on a serious note, is there some, attraction that I don't know what you would call it, like a soul might have? Like Biff to manure and Marty to skateboards and Pepsi and... Like, is there something there? Like, do people have natural attractions to certain things?
Like how certain women are always drawn to domineering men or abusive men? That some people are just drawn to poo?
Are there real patterns? Like, are there real patterns in your life? I mean, when you watch the 3 movies, at least, 30% of the scripts are just recycled in each sequel.
Yep.
And just be changed. But what if real life is really like that? And we don't realize how cyclical it is because these things are just so mundane. Like, you know, would you, if you're into skateboards, are you really going to know that your great-great-grandpa's also into Old West skateboards?
I don't know, because if my great-great-grandpa was as lazy as me, he wouldn't have lived back then.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think some things have had to have changed.
Well, it's funny. I mean, obviously in the movie, like Robert says, it's just kind of a gag, but that is interesting if there, you know, if there really is some sort of connection like that, these patterns that just keep repeating themselves throughout history.
Exactly.
You know, another thing that annoyed me, if I could throw one more thing out there, is in the first movie, in the first Back to the Future movie, Marty has saved his existence. His picture is back to normal, and he's getting all set to go back to 1985, and he's ready to start the car, and Doc Brown's calculations are presumably 100% accurate, and he's getting the car, and the car doesn't start. Now, you would think, now he eventually gets the car to start, hits the gas, and the timing's perfect, and he's back to 1985, but did Doc Brown, like, in his calculations, did he, like, calculate that it would stall and it would take 20, 30 seconds to start the thing? Because if that thing actually started when he first tried it, he would have hit the cord way too early, like 20, 30 seconds before the lightning hit. You know, like, am I right there?
You are. Is that a predestination paradox?
How so?
And, well, I guess I'm kind of fuzzy on the whole predestination paradox thing, but I'm thinking of an episode of the TV show Futurama, which is about time travel, an episode entitled Roswell That Ends Well. And the scientist in that warns, he says, whatever you do in the past, don't change anything. Unless you are meant to change that, in which case, don't not do that. So, you know, was there some sort of, like, greater cosmic force in play that did cause that to stall? Because if it hadn't stalled, then it never would have happened.
Yeah, maybe it is this... Yeah, exactly. It's quantum leap. It's the same force that is trying to correct the past, and it's the god of time travel.
Right. Who is the god of time travel? Is it Christopher Lloyd? Is it St. Lloyd?
It's Spock.
It is Spock.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to me, one of the major appeals of time travel, and one of the reasons I'm fascinated by time travel, is what we can learn about ourselves. You know, if I could travel through time and witness the past, I mean, I'd want to maybe go see the dinosaurs. I'd want to go see the Sermon on the Mount. I'd want to go, you know, be in America when you know, the Europeans first came over and experience that. I mean, and it wouldn't just be, you know, to work things to my advantage like Marty McFly and others. I mean, it would be to get a deeper understanding of humanity and who we are and where we came from. And similarly, if I believe it was possible to go to the future, I'd like to do that to sort of learn more about humanity and who we are. But it seems like this movie, and correct me if I'm wrong, Marty didn't really learn anything about himself, really, by his time travel. He didn't learn anything about, or not much at least, about who he should be, other than he shouldn't race needles in the car. But other than that, I mean, he didn't really learn anything, get any insight with his time travel. Or am I wrong?
Well, if anything, his careless time travel made his life a heck of a lot better. His house was nice, family was happy, he got his big truck. He did seem to, like you said, he learned not so quick to do something foolish when someone calls him chicken. But did he really learn anything other than, hey, I've got this cool truck now?
No.
No, Doc learned. Do you think Doc learned something about maybe trying to enjoy the finer things in life instead of just pursuing his mad science all the time?
You'd think so, because he was back there in the 1800s, and it seemed like he was enjoying that lifestyle, but then he made a big time travel machine out of a train and was taking his family across time for fun.
Yeah, so he met Claire, and it kind of seemed like there was a change in his character there, and he learned that love is more important than plutonium. But then you're right, then he builds another crazy time travel machine and carries on. So yeah, Robert, I think you have a good point.
Yep.
I guess the only one that learned anything was, in an odd way, I don't know how, it was Biff. Because Biff was really dumb in the past, because he kept falling for that, hey, what's that over there? And then getting punched move, right? And then Rich Biff didn't fall for it. And Rich Biff, and even old Biff even learned, it's make like a tree and lean. You sound like a butthead when you do it wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, at what point did he actually learn that? I mean, Biff seems to actually learn. You know, I don't know how he learned that, though. And when you're rich, someone tells you, hey, don't fall for that, look over your trip.
Yeah, at what point did Biff finally smarten up and learn that it is make like a tree and leave?
Yeah.
And why didn't he learn that in the regular timeline? Like, how come Rich Biff knew that, but, like, regular Biff in the original pre-screwed around 1985 timeline, how come Biff hadn't learned that? Or I guess maybe I'm assuming he hadn't learned that.
Maybe the lesson of the whole thing, though, is summed up by Huey Lewis. When he sings in the first movie, "Don't take money, don't take fame, don't need a credit card to ride this train," do you think he's talking about Doc's time-traveling train? And if he is talking about that, do you think that Huey Lewis traveled through the future and saw Back to the Future 3 and then wrote that line?
I think if Huey Lewis traveled to the future, I think he'd take a look at what happened to his career and...
invest in something.
Yeah, I think he would have done something differently than write Power of Love. Maybe go to school.
maybe take a trade. Maybe do an apprenticeship and then become a journeyman plumber.
Change his name from Huey.
Well, he's an adult. He can start calling himself Hubert now.
The funny thing, too, is that when Doc went back in time to 1985, he invented all sorts of cool stuff. And I found that pretty interesting. I know he's a scientist, but if I went back in time to 1885, I had to invent, like, anything. Like, I couldn't invent a camera or a fridge or anything that we have today. I know he's a scientist, so maybe he can. But if he's that smart, then you'd think he'd be able to, you know, avoid some of the problems that they had, you know?
Right, right.
Well, I think another thing is, when he had gone back originally and he had written Marty a note, he said, "There's not a way for me to fix the DeLorean to get it to work, so I'll just hide it in this mine and you can find it." But then somehow he made a train fly, so I don't understand why he could make a train fly in time travel, but he couldn't fix the DeLorean to time travel.
Exactly. Hiding the DeLorean in the cave seems more like your way of solving a problem, Matt. It doesn't sound like... What does time
exist
with you, right? Uh-huh. If I was days, well, where's the car? Oh, I hid it in the cave. So I'm like, it doesn't work. Wouldn't start this morning, so I hid it in the cave.
Well, is there anything else you guys want to talk about?
Yeah, let's just go once around the chain here and just sort of give our final impressions of what we learned from the Back to the Future movies about time travel or about manure or about puffy orange vests. And who wants to go first? How about you, Brighton?
No, I really do like these movies. I think they, you know, they definitely sparked an interest in time travel that obviously continues. Christopher Lloyd is a genius.
Great Scott!
And I really like when he apologizes for the very elaborate model of the town and says, "Sorry, it's so crude. I didn't have time to paint it."
I apologize for the crudity of this model, but
yeah,
I just...
no, Doc, it's not the scale. It's okay, Doc.
All right.
That's one of the few gags I really liked. His elaborate stages that he was apologizing for.
Yeah.
I liked the movies, but I watched them a couple weeks ago, and then today I got up and decided to watch them again, and it was kind of difficult to get through them. I like them, and I think I'll probably watch them again in another 5 or 6 years. That's all I have.
I guess my final impression is that Chuck Berry's a thief. I mean, that's... you learn anything from that. And if ever I do travel in time, I'm staying away from my mom. I do not want any awkward moments.
Say hi to your mom for me.
So I guess... Wrapping up, I'd like to thank everyone for listening to our podcasts, and if there's an interest, we'll do this again, and I'm going to lobby for the Star Trek time travel movies to be next, so if I have any say, we'll do Star Trek next.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
So if you enjoyed this podcast, please write in and tell us what you thought about it, or post comments on t=time.blogspot.com, and if you would like to participate in future podcasts, by all means, say so, and as you can see, you really don't need any qualification. So thanks from Brighton, Matt, and myself, Robert. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.
drive.